Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. NATO's hybrid war against Russia just became more dangerous and frightening. A missile fired from Ukraine by Ukrainians landing in Poland clearly demonstrates what can go wrong due to a mistake or miscalculation. Of course, the collective West instantly moved towards invoking Article 5 of the NATO treaty, which means starting World War III. Crosstalking dangerous times, I'm joined by my guest, Anthony Kevin, in Australia. He's a former Australian career diplomat and ambassador to Poland and Cambodia. In Brussels, we have Gilbert Doctorow. He's an independent political analyst and author of Memoirs of an Expat Manager in Moscow during the 1990s. And in Belgrade, we have James Jatras. He's a former U.S. diplomat and former advisor to U.S. Senate Republican leadership. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Gilbert, let me go to you first in Brussels. What a week it has already been. We have this fiasco with a missile being fired that landed in Poland. Of course, everyone goes on edge. But, you know, I've been talking about this ever since the start of the conflict and actually before. And I've always, and many other people, have predicted exactly a situation like this that could get out of control. Unfortunately, Gilbert, there seem to be people that wanted to go to the next step. This is where we are in very dangerous times. Thankfully, a number of people have taken a step back away from the brink. Your thoughts on this situation, Gilbert?
What happened this week looked very much like a false flag operation in which Russia would be hauled out in front of the world, in this particular case, in front of NATO, as they would enter into talks about invoking Article 4 or perhaps even Article 5. It looked very much like a false flag operation. But unlike false flag operations that have been in the recent past, and I would go back here to the MH17, false flag in Syria over alleged chemical attacks by the Bashar, regime, the issue here was stopped in its tracks by the United States. That tells us a couple of things. When President Biden, a few hours after news of this missile strike in Poland, told reporters that he had reason to believe that Russia was not behind it, that changed the game. This is the first time in any such potential false flag operation that the United States has been the one to pull the plug on it all, and to say that it has the reconnaissance information that proves, or that's proved to their satisfaction, that the missile was not fired from Russia. Similar reconnaissance information surely was available for the MH17, but was not put into play. But back then, the issue was one of simply propaganda war, information war, to discredit Russia and to bring in new sanctions. If this particular false flag proceeded, the implications were far more devastating. It would, since Russia and the United States, NATO, are in a proxy war, it would escalate it into a real war, which has, as its logical conclusion, a nuclear exchange.
Okay.
For that reason, we saw the United States step back, which it hasn't done in the past. It had the United States use the information that was available to state that the Russians were not responsible. That's a dramatic change. And so a bit of a hopeful change.
Well, let me go to Anthony in Australia. Right. Hopefully, maybe this could be a trend, because we've had 10 months of this horrific propaganda and a one-sided narrative. And what happened this week is, you go up to the brink here, and this is the nightmare that, you know, going back to Dr. Strangelove, if you will. I agree with Gilbert that, you know, that it was good that the U.S. took a step back. But if we look at everything over the last few months, encouraging the Zelensky regime to do these or get involved in these kinds of affairs, I mean, there has to be some lessons learned from that. Your thoughts, Gilbert? I'm sorry, Anthony, in Australia.
I agree with Gilbert that it was a very dangerous moment. I don't necessarily agree with him that it was a deliberate false flag on Ukraine's part. I think Zelensky has a bit of a habit of being highly irresponsible, irrational almost. I think he opportunistically tried in his usual way to take advantage of what was a military mistake on the part of the Ukrainian anti-aircraft missile launchers, who sent it off in the direction of Poland, which was obviously not what they intended to do. And Zelensky opportunistically thought, well, you know, let's try and make hay out of this. And he failed. And I think it's really important that, as Gilbert says, that the United States pulled the plug on him. And this means that the spell has been broken. And I hope the wolf has, the little boy has cried wolf too often, perhaps. Yeah. I think something has changed in the way in which the West now thinks about Zelensky.
Yeah, well, we'll see with this lame duck Congress if they're going to give $37.6 billion more dollars. We'll see if that happens. James, I mean, can you explain something to me? Here you have Zelensky and his gang wanting to do everything in their power to have get NATO into a hot war with Russia. It's in a proxy war with Russia now, but get into a hot war. Ukraine doesn't come out very well in a hot war, does it? Can you explain to me why they're so keen on it? Go ahead, in Belgrade.
Well, let's be clear that the Zelensky regime, and that's what I would want to call it, doesn't really care about the Ukrainian people or about Ukraine. They're the voice of hysterical Russophobia that really only defines their concept of Ukraine in opposition to Russia. And by any means necessary, they will, if they can, drag the Western powers into this war. I don't think it's time to pop the champagne corks yet, that the West has begun to wake up about what kind of danger awaits them if they allow Zelensky and his crowd to drag us in. But it is encouraging. I saw a piece in the Financial Times recently that there's some consternation among NATO governments that they believe the Ukrainians are lying to them. They're not playing straight with them. And whether it was deliberate or inadvertent that this missile landed in Poland, I think some of them are belatedly starting to see the danger that they're in. And on top of everything else, I don't think this is the kind of shenanigans we see from a country that believes it is winning this war, despite all the propaganda that the Ukrainians are winning, the Russian pullback from Kherson and so forth. It's pretty clear that the Ukrainians are, I think, reaching the end of their rope.
Yeah, well, Gilbert, I mean, it's something that I've said many times in this program. In this context of this conflict, the party that escalates means that's the party that's losing, okay? And the party that is losing will use as much propaganda and change the narrative as much as possible in its favor. Thoughts, Gilbert?
Well, in the West, in mainstream media, the notion that Ukraine is losing is out of play. The story that we hear on the BBC at every one of their news hours or on Euronews is that Ukraine is winning and that the spirit is strong and that, on the contrary, it's the Russian army which has a morale problem. Now, the best that can be said is that the media are telling us that the winter is coming and that the war will wind down and this is a good time for negotiations. Why exactly Russia would want to enter into negotiations at this point when Zelensky adamantly opposes it is another question. But the likelihood is quite different from what the expectations of readers of Western media would find. The likelihood is the Russians will go on the counteroffensive in the middle of winter, which is the logic of their 220,000 soldiers who are finishing their training for this effort. These are reservists who aren't inducted for an indefinite period to sit in trenches. The war will continue and the Russians will smash Ukraine. And I think General Milley understands that. Mm. That is why there are voices in Washington now calling for negotiations. Not because it's a good point, particularly, but because they know a lot worse is to come for Ukraine after the new year.
Yeah, well, Anthony, I don't want to sound like too much of a hardliner, but if there are negotiations, then as far as I can see, it's Ukraine, the negotiations for Ukraine to surrender to avoid what Gilbert just said. Go ahead, Anthony.
Pretty much. The question is, the longer the fanatics in Kiev keep this thing going, the more territory Ukraine risks losing permanently. And I want to mention this continuing attack on the Ukrainian power grid because it's absolutely crucial to all this. I mean, at the moment, it's -7 in Lvov. Lvov has lost 80% of its power. Kiev has lost something like 67 or 70% of its power. This can't go on much longer. And the point is, the Russian raids are continuing. They're not stopping. And the Ukrainians have no effective way of stopping these very precisely targeted missiles, which cause almost no casualties, by the way, hitting their targets and simply destroying
Anthony, if I could houses. Just if I could just jump in here before we go to the break here. So this $37 billion the Biden administration wants to send, is that going to change the electricity grid in Ukraine anytime soon?
No, it's meaningless. No. I mean, you can import all the weapons you want, but if you haven't got electric power, you can't do very much with them. I think Ukraine is going to collapse really quite quickly. The war effort's going to collapse really quite quickly. Zelensky's crew are floundering around desperately now. What they did in Bali was a desperate move, which failed. Everything is failing. So I think it's going to unravel for Ukraine and come together for Russia rather quickly.
Okay, let me go to James here, 40 seconds before the break here. But Ukraine is winning. What's wrong with all of us on this program? James, go ahead, 40 seconds before we go to the break.
Well, I have to tell you, here in the Balkans, I hear a lot of concern from my Serbian friends that Russia not fall into the trap that they fell into in the 1990s, where every time they had a military advantage, they'd stop and say, ah, now, let's move on toward an agreement, let's have a ceasefire, let's negotiate in good faith, and then found out that that was not in good faith from the other side. And I the Russians need to think seriously about this, that when they do have the advantage, will they press the advantage, or they stop and talk to their Western partners who have no intention of keeping any promises?
Yeah, well, I think they have learned that lesson here. And I think if you look at the rhetoric that is coming out of Russia, is that they pretty much know the score and who they're dealing with here. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about when we come back from our break. Gentlemen, I'm jumping in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on dangerous times. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing dangerous times. Okay, let's go back to Gilbert in Brussels. Gilbert, staying with this incident that happened this week here, it seems to me the Zelensky regime and its backers, they wanted to achieve two things. Number one, not necessarily World War III, but to keep the coalition of the so-called willing together, because it's beginning to fray. Winter setting in Western Europe, too, not just in Ukraine. And also to keep the spigot on, keep the money flowing, because everyone know we don't know what the next Congress is going to do. I have very little faith in Republicans, but you know they do have they will have charge of the purse. Will they start thinking about how much money they're going to spend to Ukraine instead of denying it to American families? We will see. So it basically keep the coalition of the willing together and keep the money flowing. That did serve its purpose here. Go ahead, Gilbert.
Well, Europe really counts for nothing. Europe is a follower at best. You saw what happened in the initial reaction to the missile strike in Poland. The Baltic states immediately seized on this, and they sounded like loudspeakers for Kiev. They were calling for invocation of Article 5. They were naming Russia directly as responsible, and so forth.
But Gilbert, I want to unpack what you just said here. So we have the Baltic states calling for this. So if there is a hot war between NATO and Russia, the Baltic states are the first to go. I mean, I don't understand the rationality of these people that are so anxious to have a hot military conflict with Russia. Can you explain it?
Well, again, the same issue that was brought up by my fellow panelists, that Mr. Zelensky is not concerned about the Ukrainian people and is only concerned about this ideological war on Russia and new identity for Ukraine. The same is true of the Baltic states and several other states in what were formerly Warsaw Pact countries. The leadership in these countries was installed by the United States in almost as stage-managed a way as Mr. Zelensky's predecessors in February 2014 were installed in a coup d'etat. They are American agents. Well, they are not agents.
Some of them have American citizenship.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes. This all falls into line. They all were prepared for the roles they now enjoy. They are serving the United States. They are given all honors and importance in European affairs that far outweighs their economic or cultural or any other dimension you want to measure importance to Europe. So they are jackals. It is interesting that they were snubbed and shut down at once when Mr. Biden said what he did about this not being a firing by a missile by Russia. And to go back to your question, what will happen in Europe? Europe will follow what the United States tells Europe to do. And any differences or cleavages that we see in Europe between France and Germany and the Baltics or Poland or whatever, these are insignificant. They will not lead to a change in the situation in the East-West confrontation. The change in the situation will be in Washington, depending on, as you say, the political calculus, domestic politics calculus in the United States, of when the price of this becomes too big, considering the other demands on the federal budget, and when the rationality and the truth coming out of Kiev is questioned further in the way that even the Financial Times questioned it today, as Jim said.
You know, but if I go back to Australia, Anthony, I mean, again, you know, one of the things I keep stressing ever since this conflict started, that if people want to talk about negotiations and diplomacy, well, we had a whole lot of that before February 24th, okay? Russia sent out its security demands to NATO and to the United States, very clearly stated what they want. There's not going to be any negotiations and diplomacy if those issues are not met, okay? Because I think all of us are in agreement here, the Zelensky crowd doesn't care much about Ukraine. Russia has gone in and protected its own Russian speakers. And then, you know, the United States, well, that's just a casino for them and a whole lot of corruption, I would say. But Russia is just going to say, look, we told you what we want. And that, those things haven't really changed. Can the West, particularly Washington and London, come to grips with the fact that, oh, Russia has security interest as well? Go ahead, in Australia.
Well, there's a total difference in tone coming out of Moscow since the 24th of February. And it really, the difference in tone started about a month ago. And now we've got a very, very hard-headed Russia indeed, looking at the West very coldly.
Yep.
They're keeping in touch with the West. There's good dialogue going on at the level of Burns and at the level of Patrushev to his opposite number in Washington. So those two dialogues are going on, CIA and national security level dialogues. But it's a different quality altogether. I think Russia is now basically laying down an ultimatum to Washington and saying, you've lost. It's going to get worse and worse the longer you go on supporting this lunatic, and just cut your losses and get out as quickly as you can. And it's just a question of how quickly that message gets through in Washington. That's why I don't know how quickly this will all end, but I have a feeling it's going to end rather more quickly than the pessimists think it will.
James, I tend to agree with Anthony. Your thoughts, James?
Yes, just a footnote on what you asked, Peter, regarding Congress. The Republicans, whether by fair means or foul, did not as well in these elections as they thought they might. But even if they had, it really wouldn't have changed much, even though you might get a few more Trump-type populists who might consider the wisdom of wars like this. The Republican leadership, and I remember I worked in that context for 17 years, the Republican leadership is thoroughly controlled by a neoconservative outlook on the world. If anything, they're more critical of the Democrats for not being supportive enough of Ukraine and not being hostile enough to Russia. They may grouse a little bit about, oh, let's account for the spending, where's all the money going, and so forth. And even that's just window dressing. So I don't expect much change from that quarter. The only way this is going to change from Washington is, and maybe that Financial Times was a little bit of an indication of that, that even some of the people have been proponents of this war for a very long time, at some point get to the edge of a really severe conflict that would be not capable of containment, and they stand up at the edge, look down the abyss, and say, oh boy, we better pull back from this. Yep. They haven't reached that point yet. I hope they will if, as we expect, there is, as you say, I think a very strong Russian offensive coming up in this winter.
Well, Gilbert, how does, after all of the investment, and investment in every sense of the term, how does the West gracefully lose this one, okay? Can they? Or will they continue to up the ante? Will they continue to escalate? Because the way it's framed in the West is this is we have to fight them over there before we fight over here, okay? Which is completely idiotic, okay? But that's how it's framed, okay? How do you walk away from that, Gilbert?
Well, walk away they will. I wouldn't worry about it. The world didn't end when the United States pulled out of Afghanistan. What we see now on television is the constant repetition, the same mantra about how Ukraine is doing well when we all know it isn't doing well. And they will find a way to cover up the loss. The same discussion with journalists, which the head of the Pentagon said Russia, that Ukraine cannot possibly muster the force to send the Russians out of its territory. He also opened that discussion with the remark that the Russians cannot possibly take over all of Ukraine or win this war. So they will find a way to explain what happens as being, after all, the Russians didn't win it. And they will walk away.
Anthony, I think Gilbert's absolutely got it right. And said, you know, somehow, no matter what the outcome is, if there's regime change in Kiev, whatever, it's still Russia lost this conflict. That's how they're going to do it. Because essentially, that's all their message is a narrative and propaganda. Anthony.
Yeah. If I could come in there, I think Russia will help America find a soft landing when America does decide that it's going to cut its losses and stop supporting Zelensky in any serious way. Russia has a lot of options. I mean, the denazification and demilitarization of Ukraine, there are many, many ways to skin that cat, many, many ways. And it doesn't have to involve Russia occupying the whole territory of Ukraine. It might involve some form of regime change in Kiev, certainly. It might simply involve the weakening of Kiev by, for example, depriving it of the coastal strip. It would completely neuter Ukraine's potential as a security threat to Russia in the future if it lost that whole coastal strip permanently and was left with her, you know, an agrarian northwestern rump country. So, I mean, Russia will help America find a soft landing. I think that's the key point.
Well, James, I'm really glad that Anthony said that, because it would be in Russia's national interest to do that, actually, okay? I know the Western media likes to keep everything as binary. You're not agreeing. James, go ahead.
No, I do not agree at all.
Okay.
And I think that sort of thinking is very dangerous for the Russians, that it's one thing to walk away from Afghanistan. It's one thing for the West, NATO, especially the United States, which is NATO, to walk away from this, because that means that the whole purpose of NATO, Russians out, Americans in, Germans down, will be shown up to be a paper tiger, an emperor with no clothes. At that point, the global American empire that we've seen since the end of the first Cold War is over. This is an existential struggle for Washington, not for the American people, not for the United States as a normal state, but for this global empire that they basically made their fortunes on and bet all their fortunes on for decades. They cannot easily give this up. Maybe this provocation was not the right one. Maybe some people are starting to get some cold feet here, but I would not count them out yet. And this is where again, back to what my Serbian friends are saying here. The Russians, for their sake, from their point of view, if they want to be seduced about letting their enemies off easy, not humiliating them, I think that's very dangerous thinking for them. From their point of view, in my opinion, if I were in their shoes, they have to press for a military victory, be aware of the dangers that the other side will pull up its dirty tricks like they did in Syria or in Bosnia and other places. We're not out of the woods here yet by any means.
That's right. And the victory would be, in my mind, the end of NATO. That would be a first good step, gentlemen.
I agree.
That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Australia, Belgrade, and in Brussels. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.